Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From just overlooking Leicester Square, ladies and gentlemen, home of the electric icicles. Apparently. More HD stuff, because it's an HD world, ladies and gentlemen, even though it means nothing at all. Michael, a listener, submits this. Jumping on the HD bandwagon, Bausch and Lomb, now marketing Crystalens HD intraocular lenses and Pure Vision 2 HD contact lenses. He came to his optometry clinic to promote them. HD lenses, ladies and gentlemen, so you can see. So the whole world looks like a flat-screen TV. And here in London, HD traffic. Yes. So I don't know what that means. Does it mean that you can actually... Well, the little arrows on the map are sharper? I don't know. But it's a slogan, and that's good enough for those people. Now, news of the F-bomb foreclosure. The whole thing. First of all, the quote of the week comes from, of all people, Mervyn King. He of the Bank of England. Is his name on the money here? No. I don't know if anybody... And I don't have... You know, I'm like the president. I don't have money on me. Anyway, Mervyn King of the Bank of England, who says... And this is not a paraphrase. This is his, these are his words. Quote, of all the many ways of organizing banking, the worst is the one we have today. Unquote. I guess it's because they care too much. A top Treasury Department official said this week that federal investigators looking into problems with mortgage foreclosures throughout the country have found widespread and, quote, inexcusable, unquote, breakdowns in basic controls in the foreclosure process. That's all. Just that. Quote, these problems must be fixed, said Assistant Treasury Secretary Michael Barr. By the way, don't look to Michael Barr to fix him. He's leaving his post to resume his academic career and spend more time with his family. He's wishing us good luck with this, I guess. The extensive foreclosure problems, which range from flawed and fraudulent paperwork to questions about improper or incomplete loan transfers, first surfaced way back in September, when Bank of America and Ally Financial abruptly halted foreclosures for just a little while. Barr said regulators have been conducting on-site examinations of some of the latest nation's largest mortgage servicers. The exams are designed in part to ensure that filed foreclosures meet legal requirements and that affidavits the firms are filing in the nation's courts are accurate. Investigators are expected to complete their fieldwork by the end of the year. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's Thanksgiving. Well, there was Thanksgiving. There's Christmas. And they're going to do that all that by the end of the year? No wonder he wants to spend more time with his family. Although, an administration official says Barr is still under consideration for a different post, perhaps Office of Controller of the Currency, where he can spend less time with his family. And news of... How's it going over there in Afghanistan? Well, according to the U.S. military, violence there hit an all-time high in recent months. 9 years after the arrival of foreign forces, we have now been there as long as the Russians. The Pentagon said all types of combat, all types of violent incidents in Afghanistan had increased from April through the end of September, up 300% from 2007, except for the use of roadside bombs. The Pentagon's latest congressionally mandated report painted a grim picture of the situation in Afghanistan, corruption undermining the fight against the Taliban, and only halting uneven improvements to Afghans' lives have been achieved. The Pentagon depicted a resilient opponent, where the Taliban enjoys a steady stream of funding at home and from other Islamic states. Insurgents have fanned out across the country. The insurgents' tactics, techniques, and procedures continue to evolve in sophistication, said the Pentagon. And it said while the government of President Karzai is making some efforts to combat corruption, there was a questionable commitment to ending impunity and prosecuting corrupt officials. And I guess by that they mean in Afghanistan, because the impunity here is working out just fine. Hello, welcome to the show.
I sat alone and watched TV.
From London, England, home of the £7 billion royal wedding. Yeah, good thing to have in these times. That and the Olympics will break it. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector. General.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
After the United States has doled out about $24 billion during almost 8 years of recruiting, training, and mentoring, and womentoring, too, and furnishing weapons and equipment, the Iraq Ministry of Defense, Ministry of Interior, and the Army and police units they support do not have a supply system capable of maintaining readiness of the Iraqi security forces. Job well done. That's the finding of a Defense Department Inspector General's report released recently that assessed U.S. efforts to develop the logistical sustainment capability. Sustainment is a word now, ladies and gentlemen, of the Iraq security forces. The report says the defense ministry is, quote, generally dysfunctional when it comes to planning, programming, budgeting, and execution processes. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, they're doing fine. The Interior Ministry has matured in its budgeting processes. It could not, quote, effectively plan and contract to procure repair parts to support the Iraqi police vehicle fleet, unquote. When the Interior Ministry requested the purchase of a $200 million helicopter fleet, it did not provide for spare parts. Uh-oh. Maintenance support or required infrastructure facilities. Iraq needs about $600 million annually to maintain its military equipment, according to the Defense IG, but the Defense Ministry allocated only $40 million for maintenance. But, you know, we took the training wheels off. What do you expect? Defense investigators also found Iraqi Army commanders are reluctant to send vehicles, such as armored personnel carriers, to repair facilities for fear they won't be returned for a year or more, and that then they may not be working or may be stripped of parts. It's a working, it's a young democracy. The Interior Ministry's Federal Police Sustainment Brigade, oh, there's that word again, is supposed to conduct anti-insurgent and anti-terrorist operations. The ministry has provided only 25% of the logistics personnel the brigade is supposed to have, so only one of its four divisions has a logistics group. The U.S. arranged for all trainers and mentors assigned to the brigade to leave last June because it's a brigade and not a larger unit. The IG recommended that decision be reassessed. Not accomplishing the mission could have significant consequences with respect to Iraqi security forces' ability to provide for Iraq's internal and external defense. There's an understatement from the Defense Department's Inspector General. And hundreds of thousands of dollars in federal stimulus grants for victims of rape and sexual assault were misspent or squandered. The California agency responsible for the funds knew about the problems but did little to fix them. That's according to the California Inspector General, Laura Chick. Laura, change your name to woman. It's time. She said the spot check of two agencies that received a portion of $13 million in federal grants to help victims of sexual assault revealed the problems and said ultimate responsibility lies with the California Emergency Management Agency, CEMA, which doled out the money. When the groups that received the grants reported to the agency they had not made progress, the response in one instance was simply to strike out a requirement included as part of the grant. The response should be not just crossing out the objective, said Chick. It was a worthwhile goal. That's why the grant was given. She said one of the agencies that received federal dollars, the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, had not met three of the four objectives outlined in its grant, and that it spent $48,000 on expenses such as office rent and supplies that are not allowed under the grant. Stimulus money? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And, ladies and gentlemen, U.S. government drivers trusted with transporting nuclear weapons are sometimes getting drunk while on duty, said a Department of Energy Inspector General's report. Drivers were involved in 16 alcohol-related incidents from 2007 to 2010, with one agent arrested by police 3 years ago and two others handcuffed and detained last year. The Office of Secure Transportation, OST, oversees the shipment of nuclear weapons, weapons parts, and special nuclear material. It has a workforce of nearly 600 agents. Alcohol incidents such as these indicate a potential vulnerability in OST's critical national security mission, said the Energy Department's Inspector General in another possible understatement. The government has taken up steps to address drinking by agents or candidates in training. Concerns expressed by some managers on the number of alcohol-related incidents occurring over the past 3 years suggest that further action may be needed. Two of the 16 alcohol incidents took place when convoy trucks were in safe harbor status and the agents had checked into local hotels. In 2007, an agent was arrested for public intoxication, and in 2009, two agents were temporarily detained by police after an unspecified incident at a local bar. Under new rules, agents are barred from drinking alcohol 8 hours before reporting for duty. Agent candidates are prohibited from possessing kegs of beer. The Inspector General's office launched the probe after hearing allegations of alcohol abuse within OST and of incidents at a training facility at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. They're at Fort Chaffee. What do you expect them to do? It's Arkansas. Come on. News of the inspectors general, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And while we're on the subject of it's clean, it's cheap, it's safe, it's too clean, cheap, safe to meter, there's this. EPA, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and FEMA are struggling to determine which agency and with what money and legal authority would oversee cleanup in the event of a large-scale accident in a nuclear power plant that disperses radiation off this reactor site and into the surrounding area. Don't panic. It's fine. Somebody will... The effort, which the agencies have not acknowledged publicly, was sparked when the Regulatory Commission recently informed the other agencies that it does not plan to take the lead in overseeing such a cleanup. Nuclear Regulatory Commission won't take the lead in cleaning up a large-scale nuclear accident. What would they clean up? That question not asked, not answered. Money in an industry-funded insurance account for nuclear accidents would likely not be available, according to the NRC. And that's according to documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act. Well, that's the problem right there, ladies and gentlemen. That damn act. Environmentalists concerned with nuclear safety and cleanup issues say the documents indicate the government has no long-term cleanup plan in the event of an emergency. That casts doubt on the nuclear power industry's ongoing efforts to revive itself. The industry currently has 22 applications to build new nuclear power plants pending, and is marketing itself as a source of carbon-free emissions. A spokesman for the Nuclear Energy Institute, however, which represents the industry, says officials believe such cleanups would be handled by the insurance fund despite assertions in the documents to the contrary. The spokesman also downplays the likelihood of such a cleanup being necessary. You might want to chisel this, quote, into a nearby piece of stone, saying nuclear accidents are, quote, highly unlikely to occur, unquote. Other incidents unlikely to occur? The widespread breaching of hurricane protection system in one of the nation's major cities. That was totally unlikely to occur. Just happened. The NRC officials also indicated during their meetings that industry-funded insurance accounts established under the Price-Anderson Act would likely not be available to pay for such a cleanup. The account could likely be used only to provide compensation for damages incurred as a result of an accident, such as hotel stays, lost wages, and property replacement, leaving federal officials unsure where the money to pay for a cleanup would come from. This summer, EPA staff began drafting a paper on the issue in preparation for emergency drills. The paper was never completed amid disagreements between EPA staff over what authority the agency may or may not have to clean up after a nuclear power plant incident. In July, a draft of the paper cited Superfund as a possible... Let's call Superfund as a possible source of cleanup funding. But EPA staff disagree on whether Superfund is applicable to cleanup after a nuclear power plant accident, calling into question its viability as both a source of funding and cleanup authority. So, you know, it's very unlikely, but you're on your own. Clean it up yourself. You got brooms. And Dateline Metropolis, Illinois, a town so small they called it Metropolis. Replacement workers being coached and testing materials out in the open. A new report by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission found a number of troubling violations at Honeywell's Metropolis nuclear plant. More than 200 union members of the United Steelworkers are locked out of the plant. In the past couple of months, NRC inspectors tested replacement workers on the job, and according to the report, found the evaluator coached the candidate several times during task performance, adding the evaluator helped the candidate follow the procedure. NRC made 9 inspections. It also reported a small leak of deadly uranium hexafluoride gas at the plant on September 6th. Now, who's going to clean that up? Honeywell said the plant began addressing the NRC's concerns even before the inspections were finished. Well, see now, some people will blame unions. Some people will blame nuclear power. Some people will say, why are you playing the blame game? That's the wonderful thing. People can say whatever they like. It's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's thing to save. It's nuclear. Let's all get drunk and then clean up the nuclear plant. What do you say? And now, ladies and gentlemen, Tales of Airport Security. George writes, Dear Harry, this weekend I was dining in a restaurant at Seattle-Tacoma Airport in Seattle. Best place to put Seattle-Tacoma Airport, in my opinion. When I discovered an unattended bag under my table. A few moments later, I noticed that a group of three uniformed TSA agents were walking by. Wanting to catch them before they left my field of vision, I grabbed the bag and walked over. After explaining about how it was left unattended, the three agents began to awkwardly talk amongst themselves about who would deal with this sudden interruption to their conversation. After a few moments, one of the agents told me to bring the bag back to the restaurant and to tell the waiter to call the police. I asked if they could do that directly, and he just told me to return with the bag to the restaurant, which was full of people. As I started walking back, they continued their conversation and walked away. It turns out the backpack belonged to a kid who had forgotten it earlier in the evening. I was able to give it back to him. Nobody was harmed. George, San Diego. And now, more on scanning and padding. Remember, pat down is for now, radiation is forever. And on that subject, U.S. Representative Rush Holt. Yes, there's more than one American named Rush. He's a scientist and chairman of the House Select Intelligence Oversight Panel, has written to the administrator of TSA, reiterating his concerns about the use of body imaging technology, notably about potential health effects and the effectiveness of the screening to detect the full range of explosive threats known or anticipated. Earlier this year, the Congressional Biomedical Caucus, Holt's a co-chairman, hosted a briefing by Dr. David Brenner of Columbia University on the potential health effects of the backscatter X-ray devices. According to Brenner, the devices currently in use and proposed for wider deployment deliver to the scalp 20 times the average dose that is typically quoted by TSA and throughout the industry. Dr. Brenner has pointed out the majority of the radiation from X-ray backscatter machines strikes the top of the head, which is where 85% of the 800,000 cases of basal cell carcinoma diagnosed in the United States each year develop. According to Dr. Brenner, excessive X-ray exposure can act as a cancer rate multiplier. And on the other hand, we know the opt-out suggestion fizzled. At Newark Airport, on Thanksgiving, the choice between a virtual strip search and a grope was strictly academic, actually on the day before Thanksgiving. The majority of Newark's full-body scanners were idle throughout much of Wednesday. That's according to a report from New Jersey News. Does that mean there were no threats to the New Jersey area? or they weren't working, or it was just a way to speed up the lines. Don't know, do I? Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And on a related subject, of course, there has been all this talk about enhanced pat-downs. And the media have gone, I'd say, ballistic on the subject, while totally ignoring the radiation matter. That's why I go ballistic on that. But it's clear that the moment when that one individual, I believe in San Diego, man, San Diego's in the news, reacted to the imminence of an enhanced pat-down by telling a TSA screener, "Don't touch my junk," has become sort of iconic for this whole story as the media has covered it. Now, of course, you and I know that a testy, confrontational approach to TSA screeners, as with Mr. Don't Touch My Junk, just ends you up in a lot of trouble. I think he was arrested. He's facing charges. Yeah, it's just they don't take well to testy, confrontational approaches. But you got to do something. So my suggestion is a little bit of psychological jujitsu. Turn the thing around.
Well, I'm the straightest dude you'll find this side of NASCAR. I only kissed a man when I was drunk. But if I have to fly to Vegas or Madagascar, well...
Come on, baby, you can touch my junk. Come on, baby, you can touch my junk.
My clothes don't draw the least bit of attention. No old baseball scorecards are all that fill my trunk. But if you have to feel me up to earn your pension, I say,
come on, darling, you can touch my junk. Oh, yes, sir, darling, you can touch my junk.
You want to do some fishing? That's just what I've been wishing. Got a fishing hole that's aching for a friend. Let my eyes do the talking while your fingers do the walking. And we might meet again right around the bend. My wife and kids will tell you I'm no swinger. More into classic rock than bounce or crunk. But the disco ball's here if you make me linger.
Come on, girl, step up and touch my junk. Oh, come on, girl, take a chance and touch my junk.
That protest bit is just a pile of bunk. In that uniform, you're 18 kinds of hunk. So if what you're craving is an enhanced spelunk.
Oh, come on, baby, just touch my junk. Mm-hmm. Oh, come on, baby, just touch my junk. Come on, come on, come on, and touch my junk.
Try to hide. The mirror always knows there's no safe ground.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, following up on a couple things mentioned in last week's broadcast. Last week there was a report from a panel investigating hospitals that were covered by Medicare, said bad things happen in hospitals sometimes. A new study published this week in the New England Journal of Medicine says that efforts to make American hospitals safer over the past decade have, any guesses? Fallen short would be the winner. Team of researchers studied a reported 2,300 patient admissions records from 10 North Carolina hospitals, selected at random, like you do. They discovered in 588 cases, patients were somehow harmed as a result of medical procedures, medications, or other related causes. That would be slightly more than one in five. Of the 588 harms that were identified, 41% were temporary, requiring intervention. 42% were temporary harms requiring initial or prolonged hospitalization. Hospital hurt you? Got to stay in the hospital. Sounds like good for the hospital business. An additional 2.9% were permanent. 8% were life-threatening. 2.4% caused or contributed to a patient's death. They reported that 63% of the incidents were avoidable. These harms are very common. There's no evidence they're improving, said one of the researchers. The problem is the methods that have been best proven to improve care have not been implemented across the nation. Methods include computerizing patient information and prescription records, limiting the number of consecutive hours that nurses spend on the job, and implementing checklists for surgical operations and other medical procedures. All I know is only time, I've had surgery. I had shoulder surgery a couple years ago. I think I may even have mentioned it on this program. May have even said, ow. The guy who was going to perform it, I think his nurse did had me actually write an X with grease pencil on the shoulder to be operated on. Just in case. Just in case he goes, I forget which my left, I can't keep my left and my right straight. Which is checklist for surgical operations. The most common incidents involved procedural error, medication-related problems, and hospital-acquired nosocomial infections. Do you know what a nosocomial infection is? No, neither do I. Harm resulting from medical care was common. There is little evidence that the rate of harm has decreased substantially from 2001, the researchers said. Their findings validate concern raised by patient safety experts in the U.S. and Europe that harm resulting from medical care remains very common. The results, said one of the researchers, were disappointing, but not entirely surprising. Hey, that describes so much of what's going on. Disappointing, but not surprising. Or amazing, but not surprising. And following up on the Better Business Bureau, alleged to give higher marks to firms that pay dues to the Better Business Bureau, the Better Business Bureau gave the lowest grade possible to Staples, which has refused to become a dues-paying member, and gave its competitor Office Depot an A-minus rating. And then the Bureau withdrew its F rating of Staples, now listed as having no rating. Office Depot, despite having a much worse record, continued to have an A-minus rating. Office Depot is a dues-paying accredited member. That's taking care of business. The BBB insists that paying dues has little impact on a firm's grades and deny critics' claims that it changed from its 96-year-old satisfactory/unsatisfactory rating system to letter grades as a way to pressure businesses to pay up. Better business for the Better Business Bureau, ladies and gentlemen. And now, news from outside the bubble. The BBC reports that the more TV a toddler watches, the higher the likelihood they will do badly at school and have poor health at the age of 10, according to researchers. The study of 1,300 children by Michigan and Montreal universities found negative effects on older children rose with every hour of toddler TV. Performance at school was worse. Consumption of junk foods was higher. UK experts said parents could allow young children to watch some high-quality TV. They still have that? Our findings make a compelling public health argument against excessive TV viewing in early childhood, said Dr. Linda Pagani of the University of Montreal. Higher levels of TV viewing at 2 was linked to a lower level of engagement in the classroom and poor achievement in mathematics. Researchers also found a decrease in general physical activity, but an increase in the consumption of soft drinks and in body mass index. Dr. Pagani said early childhood is a critical period for brain development and formation of behavior. High levels of TV consumption during this period can lead to future unhealthy habits. Common sense would suggest that television exposure replaces time that could be spent engaging in other developmentally enriching activities and tasks that foster cognitive, behavioral, and motor development. Although we expected that the impact of early TV viewing would disappear after 7.5 years of childhood, the fact that negative outcomes remained is quite daunting. Let him watch video games. Much better for him. Now, Hamid Karzai's desperation for a Good Friday Agreement for Afghanistan led officials to... Good Friday Agreement was what ended the fighting in Northern Ireland. Led officials to ignore repeated warnings from their own spy chief that they should not trust a man who orchestrated a humiliating face-to-face meeting between President Karzai and a shopkeeper who pretended to be the Taliban's second most powerful leader. This is from The Guardian. Amrullah Saleh, the former head of Afghanistan's spy agency, said his agency first vetted the man who claimed to be a representative of Mullah Mansour, one of the highest-ranking figures in the Taliban, in mid-2008, but rejected him after he was unable to prove his credentials. However, the go-between who said he was a Taliban leader from Kandahar subsequently approached the interior minister the following year and was enthusiastically embraced by an Afghan government desperate for a breakthrough in peace talks. Saleh, the former head of the spy agency, who was fired by Karzai earlier this year, said all his warnings were ignored. I tried time and again to convince my colleagues in the ministry and subsequently at the palace that he is not a genuine representative of anybody, he told the Observer newspaper. Meanwhile, those peace talks conducted with an imposter who posed as a Taliban leader and which led to a meeting with Hamid Karzai in Kabul and thousands of dollars in goodwill payments, by the way, being given to the man, believed to be a grocer, were started by the Afghan government and approved by the former American commander, General McChrystal, the Guardian has learned. I wish I'd known this when General McChrystal was in New Orleans for that big leadership conference a couple weeks ago, and I got to meet him. I could have introduced myself as a head of the Taliban. In fact, the overriding desire to find a negotiated end to the conflict, particularly on the part of Prime Minister of Britain David Cameron, appears to have generated credulity on all sides. This account sharply contradicts claims made by the Afghan presidency, which has put the entire blame on Britain, apparently supported privately by U.S. officials. That's nice. Working together, teammates. This overriding desire to find a negotiated end led to an embarrassing debacle, says The Guardian, that has lessened trust and set back hopes of meaningful negotiations in the near future. Sources close to the contact said the imposter who claimed to be Mullah Mansour, the Taliban's deputy leader, was originally introduced by an insurgent commander in Kandahar to the then Afghan interior minister. McChrystal asked the British spy agency MI6 to develop the contacts rather than go to the CIA, which was not empowered by the necessary White House directive to enter into direct talks with the Taliban. The absence of such a presidential finding is seen by many diplomats on both sides of the Atlantic as an obstacle to progress towards a political settlement. MI6, delighted to have been given the mission, appears to have gotten carried away with enthusiasm for the breakthrough, brushing aside doubts raised by both U.S. and British officials, as well as the former Afghan spy chief, about the credibility of the supposed Taliban. Our friends got very excited, one official involved in the discussions recalled. I remember everyone being very pompous and secretive about this. Now the U.S. head of the military, Admiral Mike Mullen, says the U.S. had suspected the self-described Taliban leader was an imposter. There were very early initial suspicions. It took a little while to verify who he was or who he wasn't. And in fact, it turns out he wasn't the guy he was claiming he should be. So the U.S. and Britain arguing about who's to blame. What are the Afghans saying at the moment? Let's tune in.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where you give us the tote bag.
From the magnificently re-restored presidential palace in Kabul, this is Karzai Talk. I'm Walid.
And I'm Hamid. We're the Carpet Brothers.
I thought the carpets came from Iran, not Afghanistan.
Getting closer every day.
Today's show is presented with the help of private security firms who are guarding our studio right now.
We hope.
Otherwise, short show.
Yeah.
And we're coming to you today from the newly appointed green room at the palace.
That's right. It's called that because Walid walked in about 15 minutes ago with several hundred dollars dropping from his pockets.
Well, even a corrupt guy has got to eat.
If you're serious about eating, change those dollars into something that isn't falling faster than my approval rating. But seriously, I keep telling my younger brother, get out of the heroin business and into something with the future.
And I keep telling my older brother, don't touch my junk.
Could be a bumper sticker.
It could, if we had bumpers. Hey, if I run the government the way my older brother does, no. I wouldn't be wholesaling heroin. I'd have to be using it.
Will you stop?
Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hi, first-time caller. Love the show.
Thanks. That makes one of you.
I was just wondering, when you're opening peace talks with the Taliban officials.
If, not when.
Why, not if?
Well, anyway, we're thinking of opening very preliminary talks with Taliban.
Just you, as an individual?
Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with you.
No. I'm a provincial official in Helmand. It's my job.
Well then, how come you're calling us up on the radio?
It's the only way I can get through.
Yes, my older brother's not that good with technology. He thinks a smartphone is what you use to call a professor.
Anyway, how do you determine that the people you're having talks with are who they claim to be?
In other words, are they real bad guys or just bad guys pretending to be real bad guys? My brother can tell you all about this.
No, not really. I wasn't part of the whole thing.
He walked into the room where the Americans were meeting with a Taliban official.
Which is how he was introduced to me until I looked at him and I realized that he couldn't possibly be who he said he was.
And you knew this how?
Well, he was supposed to be the guy we paid off for safe passage to Pakistan last year.
And he wasn't?
No way. I would have recognized him anywhere. He had this little nervous tick.
So there you go, caller. No tick, no Taliban.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much.
We really didn't answer his question.
That's called our format.
But, you know, I really blame the Brits. They should know better.
The Americans shouldn't?
Mm-hmm. The Brits have been through this all once before, trying to run the world from London.
You know, my older brother is right.
Thank you.
The Americans aren't trying to run the world from London.
I'm not defending them, you know. No. They keep telling me things are getting better, things are getting worse. Tell me something I don't know.
Opium up 250 this week.
Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hi, I'm calling from Pakistan.
Uh-oh.
You offering us sanctuary?
Because you're giving it to everybody else.
Just wondering if you can tell the Americans to knock off the drone attacks over here. I haven't had a good night's sleep in 6 months.
You would be a good match for my little brother. He hasn't slept more than 5 minutes a night since he went into business.
Hey, hey, you can sleep when you're dead. And in my business, if you do, you are.
But you know, every time I complain about something over here, my American friends look at me like I'm either crazy or cowardly.
Mm-hmm. How did they look at you the rest of the time?
That has nothing to do with the lady's question. But seriously, if we could get some Pakistani help in restricting the flow of jihadists across the border, we'd certainly be able to reciprocate by asking our American friends to cut back the drone attacks.
Well, what my older brother doesn't realize is that if the jihadists weren't coming across the border, they'd be staying in Pakistan, and Pakistan would need more drone attacks.
What my older brother does not realize is that we're out of time. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Legal services for Karzai Talk were provided by Ketchum and Newcomb.
Opium smuggling services provided by me.
You don't have to give yourself credit.
I know, but I like to.
Join me and my little brother, Waleed, next week for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Go round in circles, lust trade. Heavy load, feels like a monkey on your back. Don't you worry, pretty baby. Honey child, don't you moan. When a dark night is over, there's gonna be a brand new dawn. No motivation, disintegration. You lost your sense of destination. But don't you worry, pretty baby. Honey child, don't you moan.
Don't you moan.
When a dark night is over, there's gonna be a brand new dawn. What
goes up
must come down. This old world keeps spinning round. Ain't nobody knows the day till the evening sun goes down.
Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Think of it.
We're so sorry.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has apologized to Republican congressmen for having praised Fidel Castro after the former Cuban leader made positive remarks about Israel. In an interview with The Atlantic, Castro defended Israel and Jews and criticized Iran, leading to praise from Netanyahu. Representative Ileana Ross Lehtinen of Florida, the most senior Republican woman in the House, represents part of Miami-Dade County with its large Cuban immigrant community. She was born in Havana. On hearing about Netanyahu's praise for Castro's remarks, she contacted several Israeli officials, asking them to urge the prime minister to retract his remarks. On his visit to the U.S., the prime minister called the lawmaker by phone and apologized. A Church of England bishop who made deeply offensive comments on Facebook about the royal engagement, has been suspended from his public duties. The Bishop of Willesden, the Right Reverend Pete Broadbent, said the union between Prince William and Kate Middleton would last about 7 years. He apologized for the remarks, but has been asked by the Bishop of London to withdraw from public ministry until further notice. The Northern Michigan man who said he was humiliated recently by a Detroit Metro Airport security pat-down that ended up spilling urine onto his shirt and pants from a urostomy bag under his clothing says he's gotten a call from the head of the Transportation Security Administration apologizing for the incident. "Of course, I was very gracious and accepted his apology," said Thomas Sawyer. "This is not about anger at all." The head of the TSA, John Pistol, pledged to require more training of screeners and to investigate the incident. Two Israeli police officers apologized to Jordan's chargé d'affaires in Israel after allegedly assaulting two Jordanian embassy employees, according to the Jordan Times. Police officers visited the Jordanian embassy and have expressed their deepest regrets regarding the assault, because the IDs and passports didn't exactly match. An attempt to get into the Thanksgiving spirit backfired on a Twin Cities, Minnesota sports bar. Station 280 Sports Bar in St. Paul advertised their weekend drink specials with a poster that many found offensive. The ad shows a scantily clad woman dressed in a Pocahontas costume and cartoon images next to her of a Native American and a cowboy sitting drunk on a floor. And it reads, "Drink like an Indian, party like a pilgrim." Jessica Norden, manager of the bar, said, quote, "We definitely apologize over and over and over to everyone that was offended. That was not our intention at all. I just want to make sure that's very clear. That was not our intent," unquote. Intent was for you to get drunk and maybe drive some nuclear... No, it wasn't. And conservative member of the House of Lords, Howard Flight, has issued an unreserved apology for saying child benefit changes would encourage the poor to breed. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave. If it's such a giant, why can't it reach the west coast? I don't know. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com or kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through kcrw.com. And it would be just like sober guys driving the nuclear stuff if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Already, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Adrian Bodenham here at Global Radio in London, where the show's going to be in residence for the next little while. He seems fine with it. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard hereon. Still, haven't checked in the last hour, but still available, conceptually at least, at harryshearer.com. Comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.